Hello and welcome back to Broadcast Focus. My name is Russell Trafford-Jones, and on this channel, we look behind the media industry, talking to the people who create it, who support it, and who are solving interesting problems. Today, I'm joined by Romain Boucault, a longtime developer and open source evangelist in streaming. Romain is the founder and CEO of Motion Spell, and he's here to tell us what GPAC is and why we've missed a trick if we haven't heard of it. Romain, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Russell. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you with us. So thanks a lot for being here. Now, you've been involved in media for quite a long time, and we're going to unpick what it is that Motion Spell is focused in. But give us a little flavor for what drives you. What's your background?
Yeah, so I'm a computer engineer. I have a master's degree in computer engineering and applied mathematics. So I'm a musician too. So I made a bunch of records, and I wanted to work in, you know, digital music somehow. But somehow I failed into video. And yeah, I went to do my last internship in a company called Allegro, bought by Anivia and then bought by Atem. So doing some live transcoders and also doing some test vectors for conformance. So I digged deep into the technical bit streams from the start. And I was a fan of open source. I really liked the idea for my audio record. So that was 20 years ago. And the music industry was not at its best. And so we decided to use the new Creative Commons licenses to release our audio records. And that was the beginning for me of, you know, this sharing economy where, you know, you would give it for free and people were free to give back. That was quite a kind of a novel idea at the time. And as I was a software engineer, of course, it was kind of natural for me to do the same with open source software. I spent 4 years at Allegro building these new IP transcoders at the time. And then I shifted to public research. I got a grant to work at Telecom Paris, and it happened that so got lucky to work with some of the an international renowned team editing the GPAC open source project that I had contributed to, but as a minor contributor. And I got a chance to work on this project for 3 years. And I thought it was so promising that I decided to build a company around it with the initial idea of building something that would look like a cooperative, you know, make it sustainable. You're an open source contributor, you're gifted, you want to make it a living. Yeah. Then give people a chance to, yeah, for these talented people, because, you know, software engineers are sometimes, you know, kind of geeky or whatever. Just to make sure that it was a safe place for them to continue writing some good code, because, you know, talent, there's a battle, a race for talents. And we were maybe not in a good position, but offering these open source positions where people could work remote 10 years ago was a good option for them. And then it's just grown. I've spent the last decade doing it up to the point where 2 years ago, we signed this press release with Netflix, and I think people started to realize that, as you said, yeah, open source is, and the thing that we do is underneath a lot of people that the people in this industry actually use.
So your company is called Motion Spell. So tell us about the company, and then we'll relate it to GPAC and the software underneath.
Yeah, Motion Spell is a professional service and training company around GPAC. So that's around it. And then, you know, we have several activities, several, you know, thematics. So there are things that are related to GPAC itself, the integration of your project that uses GPAC, but also really specific projects related, for example, to conformance. We are really, because we have roots in public research and standardization, for example, at MPEG, we're really technical and technically focused, and we can help people, you know, bring a piece of technology into something that can be deployed in the industry.
And so it's training about how to use the GPAC. Is it, what do we call GPAC? The media suite of tools?
Yeah, it's a project, really. Like, there's, as I said, it really takes roots in research. And we build some software. And of course, the software is the interface between the project and its users. But I really think of it like, you know, a team of people really top notch when it comes to media transport and streaming. And so we have this wonderful piece of software, really gifted people writing excellent code, really in the spirit of this open source software that everybody uses. It just works and people stop thinking about it.
So we can see the website here. This is the features section. So it makes it clear that it's a framework. So I guess a framework is similar to a suite. It's got a number of different utilities in. And what are we able to do with this? We're able to put any video, any audio in, get it out. What kind of things can we do while it's in the midst of the framework?
So really interesting question. So when it comes to the use cases, so as I said, really grounded into research, and until 10 years ago, GPAC was really different. It was not focused on, as you can see now, on a professional video with some, you know, many codecs and encryption. It was more a project similar to, I would say, Flash. Almost 30 years ago, 25 years ago, MPEG released something that was the open equivalent to Flash. And GPAC started actually as a startup in New York City almost 25 years ago.
Okay.
Doing some interactive stuff, interactive, 3D. That was the era of Second Life. And so GPAC is really more than just, you know, 2D screen content that is still mainstream nowadays. And I think this ground in innovation is really what differentiates GPAC from some other projects. Some other projects don't have some of this R&D DNA. This is lagging behind. But with GPAC, it's a bit different because most of the time when you come and you say, hey, Apple does their new VR headset and it uses this multi-view HEVC codec. Actually, that's an old codec already covered by research. And so we've had an implementation for 8 years in GPAC. Mm-hmm. And so what is great with GPAC is that compared to some other real open source project, we're not lagging behind when it comes to R&D in the industry. We're really pushing. We have more than 500 contributions at MPEG, for example. And on the other side, it's really the solidity of some open source that you can take and you can deploy with a real community, so that if you need something and if you come to see us and want to try GPAC, there's a high chance that, you know, the innovation that you want to do is somehow already covered with GPAC. So part of the things, you know, making it, you know, flexible with some professional services behind it, and all the innovation being backed up either by us or paid, you know, through professional services by the companies. But we have the DNA actually to, you know, make it a really interesting project if you're into innovation.
So we mentioned Netflix. It's a good place to start. What's the kind of key thing, that the main thing that they've found GPAC did that meant that they chose that and didn't do something else? What's the functionality? What's the functionality they're going for?
Yeah, I'm not sure they thought this way. I think they got their own implementation, and at some point they said, "This is not our core job to try to compete on the packaging. There's already really good packagers, including some of, you know, commercial or open source ones." And they made their own investigations and they ended up choosing us. I think the really big benefit of going with an open source solution like ours, with the R&D and with the professional support is that they're really flexible. They announced that they were using us, and after that they said, you know, we're doing zillion of new things, and just deploy live or a NAT tier, a NAT based tier, and really deploying faster than going really faster than what people would imagine. I remember people saying Netflix would never go live. Netflix would never insert advertisement in it. Netflix would never do something interactive like Bandersnatch. They're really focused on, you know, doing your film. They are not never going to go into production. And when you look at it, they are using GPAC everywhere. They're using it to pre-process their, you know, production content for the distribution to the main people. Mm-hmm. For the preview, we made some communication. We got a really nice, with a Netflix engineer talking at the NAB streaming summit last year. Mm-hmm. And they were really nice to explain to the people exactly how they were using it and how it would fit into what they were doing. So for me, the key point is just flexibility. You just move faster. And what is great with Netflix is that some customers pay for some features and they say, hey, you need to keep it closed source and we're going to open source it, or they're not really transparent about what they do. This is not the case with Netflix. They are using the plain open source version of GPAC. So you can replicate.
Mm-hmm. So using it for like packaging on the way out, the pre-processing on the way in, and a general toolbox throughout the process chain.
Yeah, maybe I didn't answer your previous question about the tooling also. So we have a common line, mostly on-demand packager, which is called MP4Box. Used to be our really, the main tool in GPAC. Mm-hmm. And then a couple of years back, for reasons that are a bit long to explain, we were really doing the packaging and people were processing files, putting the files on the server, then executing GPAC, for example, to create a dash, MPEG dash asset or an HLS asset, and putting on the server. But it created some delays. It was quite cumbersome. And at some point, we said it would be better if we were able to leverage the rest of the ecosystem. And for example, you could leverage FFmpeg, which is another open source project used by virtually a lot of company, if not anybody. So we were with them at NAB on a common booth, and we could see that a lot of people, and especially a lot of engineers, are stopping by and saying, hey, we're using your software every day. That's so great. And imagine that you can, because GPAC is to packaging what FFmpeg is to encoding. Mm-hmm. And so you can get the best of both worlds and combining together with the new GPAC version that we did like 5 years ago. And so now GPAC is able to leverage FFmpeg, but other professional appliances or whatever you could imagine. You can build your own workflow, you connect everything together, and then it's GPAC plus the rest of the world, making it so flexible. And so we have an application in GPAC that is called GPAC. And GPAC is a kind of workflow builder that you can use. And GPAC runs on any system, including with some limitations, of course, but in your web browser. So we have a WebAssembly build, and WebAssembly is basically a language that can be run directly in your browser. So if people, because GPAC is basically an open source application. So when you want to use it, you dig into some technical documentation and the website that you show with some features, etc., which, you know, may make it a bit abstract for people. But we have this web page, wasm.gpac.io. You can go, you can try GPAC. There is a drop-down list with some use cases. I think the real thing with this technology is that it's really abstract. When you think of a video or audio encoder, you can still imagine what it is about. When it comes to, you know, packaging and transport, I think for a lot of people, it's a lot more abstract. So they understand the keywords, HLS or MPEG dash, but having the chance to get these open source tools with these use cases that can be executed in a browser, I just hope that it allows people to onboard faster.
This is it, a blank canvas.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's a black canvas. And if at the bottom, there is a select an example.
Yeah.
And basically, that's kind of things that you can execute directly from your browser. And so as you see, it's supposed to be an open source. It's an open source and command line application. So it's mostly for people who already know what they are doing. It's not for the general public, I would say.
That's really good. It's amazing what you can do with WebAssembly as well.
Absolutely. So you can execute stuff directly in it. We have some other demos where you get some previews. It allows people just to, because the problem with such abstract technology in general, it's not only about GPAC. We have the chance to have a community, and so there are many people reviewing it. That's the magic of open source, right? You have thousands of eyes scrutinizing your technology. When there is a problem, you just click on a button and the community is answering you. So that's really magic. But I guess sometimes even engineers, when they are for the first time in front of such technology, they don't know exactly if the project they are looking at will answer their problem, their challenge. Mm-hmm. Yeah, issue. So we need to make it simple, I think. I was talking about onboarding. I've really been into this lately. I think there is a question of, educating the people and making sure they understand that they are using the right tool for the right purpose. We're talking about disruption. Everybody's talking about reducing the cost. I think a lot of this comes also from the fact that, people are using sometimes tools that are doing too much, and so people are paying too much compared to what they need to pay.
I guess the one of the benefits of the way that GPAC is created and that with this framework idea is that a company such as Netflix, a lot of large companies like to do things themselves because it's their money on the line if it goes wrong, so they kind of want to architect the system. But they also want to have some sort of surety about knowing that each part of the system is going to work. So because they've got that interface, they're able to take the work that you and the other contributors have done, know that that's going to work and get some support at the same time. But it's still actually up to them to put it together into this larger workflow rather than relying on one monolithic piece of software, which I guess is what you're saying is a good thing to move away from.
Yeah, so I got a really interesting discussions also from Meta, especially the Instagram teams. So they operate at a scale that is just insane. I think they are like 20 times bigger than YouTube, because on Instagram, it's always video and people recording video all the time. And at some point, they got a problem. Each of the video that they were receiving, they needed to transcode and process it. And there was a problem, like the size of the infrastructure couldn't grow as fast as the volume video that they were ingesting. So they were heading to a crash and they knew it. And they made a blog article about how they finally solved this problem, and they decided not to transcode any of the video, but also transmux some of them, because on some of the phones, you can already use the right codec with the right parameters. You have control over this. They have their own application. And then they can send a content that can be reprocessed lightly to be distributed at least at first, because most of the videos will have a low number of viewers, mm-hmm. right? And a few of them are going to become popular. And so it makes sense to post-process all the videos that are going to be popular. But the economics behind transcoding with a high-quality transcoder, everything that comes in, maybe that was if you wanted to keep your infrastructure simple, of course you would do it. But eventually, given the volume, it made more sense just to make it simpler. And that's when they came to use GPAC to do these kind of things. It's not the only customer that we have. We have a lot of customers building OTT channels sets. And basically, you have premium channels. anyone who uses, you know, premium encoders, they have SLAs, etc. But there is a lot of secondary channels where the number of simultaneous viewers is actually pretty low. And so they don't have all the SLAs. And basically, they decide to run with, I would say, lower quality or at least lower cost solution, because mostly it's not, I think that the quality is that much lower. It's just that it costs so much less to run. And so they decide to go sometimes with solutions with FFmpeg, but when it comes into limitations, when it comes to packaging, etc., GPAC is a natural fit. So there's tons of application, I think, where, you know, I think we're in a good position. We've put ourselves in the good position of, as I said, having the R&D, the open source part, and the professional services that makes it, for some use cases, a natural, you know, usage. If you're doing innovation, if you need to launch things fast, if you need more flexibility.
And there's a player as well, isn't there?
Yes, correct. I'm going to tell you the story behind the player. The problem is that when you're doing innovation, you have a new technology, but then there is a chicken and egg problem. You have a generator, but how do you know that it works? Mm-hmm. And the problem is that to do innovation, you need to already have a sufficient asset so that the next technology is just the next step, and you just pay for a small amount. Otherwise, you're waiting for a team to build something. And when it comes to research, basically research labs or standardization teams, they don't have that much money to spend. So the software that they do most of the time is not always of quality that's good enough to be deployed by the industry.
Okay.
And that's where we fit, right? We have this software that's already deployed by the industry with some industry-backed entity motion spell. And at the same time, we're still on the standardization. And so to solve this chicken and egg problem, we said, okay, we have all the knowledge, let's do a player. And mostly it was useful when working with interactivity or low latency, etc. Before the other ones would implement, we would use our player. But the maturity of the player is lower. At the moment, for me, we have some use cases. We sold quite some licenses, and especially, but not necessarily like a player comparable to Dash.js or the Bitmoving player or Theo player. It's mostly for people doing some interactivity, for example. You're in the train or you're in an elevator. You need an interface on the top of your video. You need to build interactive stories. You need to do 360. And for example, you want to be able to execute the software on a public infrastructure. For example, in schools, they have computers. They don't control the network. Or people in churches, for example, wanted to stream some content and they have some sometimes personalized requirements. So they need the flexibility I was talking about. So we said a lot of licenses also outside of the usual use cases in the industry and for the player. For example, in medical application, we are really advanced when it comes to low latency. And one of the big applications is medical appliances like remote surgery or these type of things. And of course, they need a way to, you know, get the images back and make sure that they control the quality of the image and the latency, etc. So working with the customer solution makes sense.
And presumably on the audio side, there's just as many options as on the video side. And if you're doing 360 and that video, that lends itself to immersive sound and the many, many permutations of video and audio that entails.
Absolutely, absolutely. I remember, so for 360, absolutely. We eventually wrote a complete audio mixer, you know, my background as a musician, again.
Of course.
A lot of software engineers like music, so.
Yeah.
It's really funny, there is a lot of care being put into audio. And yeah, it's supporting all the codecs, of course, being able to mix everything, the specialization. And I was going to say something. Yeah, I think my first customer in MotionSpell was DTS. And at the time, DTS, I went to do a training. And when I went there, I was really surprised in their headquarters. They had so many innovations that just mixed, you know, that's what we call NGA now, next generation audio. Yep. With the fact that you can choose the speaker, you can make your own mix for the music and for sports, and there would be some interactivity. That was the years where the audio would be enhanced. Like, you're listening for the audio, for example, you're in your car or in transportation, you're listening to the radio. And then because you have this internet connection, you get access to a quiz or to additional images or to additional links, just enhancing media. And for me, that's the right way to do it. You have a media that's overly popular. And radio was totally different from TV, and TV is probably totally different from the, you know, on-demand consumption that we have right now. And it's totally different from video games. But just getting the fact that radio used to be listened by 98% of the overall population, and just, you know, bringing it to the next level by saying, hey, you know, the two of us were having a conversation and we're just enhancing it with a video. You can enhance it with some quiz. What do you think about this, etc.? If we're, you know, live, low latency, and engaging the audience. And I think people are super happy when, you know, they see this kind of conversation. They may have questions and they say, hey, I'm watching it on demand. It's too late. What is the way of asking questions? So I like it, right? We're creating media. It's a platform for, you know, humanity to, you know, for me as open source, create stuff and communicate.
It's really interesting. And I think you're quite right. And the, you know, the challenge over the last, I don't know how many years, let's say a couple of decades, has been to find, you know, different ways of engaging. And we keep on coming up with more and more technologies, such as interactive video and the ability to click on the screen, answer questions. But then the older versions of media don't seem to naturally move into that. So how do we look to the future in a way which allows us to take this new technologies on and put them in the right place? And it's difficult, isn't it? So who knows what the next 5 to 10 years will hold in that respect, you know, both on traditional media, but you know, anything like Instagram or even Netflix.
Yeah, I have another anecdote on this. So GPAC has supported the SCSI 35 markers. So, you know, the markers that you use to insert your advertisement, basically, in the industry. So we had a really generic way of handling it. And now in the new GPAC version that's going to be out, there's going to be a really more easy way to analyze it, to reinsert it, etc. So we had this generic way that allowed you to get some dynamic metadata and insert it into your video. For me, this is so much more interesting than what we are doing only with advertising. I don't know you, I run an ad blocker. So I'm a developer, I'm on Linux. I don't see any ads.
Sure. You know?
Most of the time, I just need to remove the ad blocker just to see how it works and analyze it. There are so many things, interesting things that we could do using the interactivity. Of course, besides the advertising, it's also a product placement. But you can imagine that when you recognize something in the image, instead of doing advertising, you just, you know, inform people. You know, sometimes they see an object that is not normal. You could hover and see, you know, what's going on. What is this object? When it comes from, you know, what is it? Not only buying it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the problem. The industry is so focused on cost that they make people go away. With the same technology, we can do so many interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
We need to choose our battles, right? And that's why it's always funny for me, you know, when sometimes they, you know, criticize media that are, and how do you say, non-profit, yeah, let's say that, non-lucrative. Yeah, they're not only going after a profit. But for me, the innovation comes from there. They're not focused on pushing, you know, more advertising and make sure that the advertising are just framed in a way. You just want to be, it's okay to have advertising. I think most people are okay to learn about new products that exist. And we buy products every day, I guess, because we need them. So happy to know about the alternatives or the innovations. And it's great that companies can pay to have this exposure. But we could do something else with the technology. You know, if innovation pushes on the advertising innovations, I think there's something that's a bit wrong, in my opinion. Like, you know, Ready Player One, where you put your headset, the rest of the world is just a nightmare. Mm-hmm. And when you put it, they know everything about you and they're just pushing, you know, personalized stuff in your brain, going in the wrong direction, in my opinion.
And as a last thought then, you know, as part of the, within GPAC, we've got this workflow framework. We've got packaging, and as you said, it can do things with FFmpeg as well to transcode. So what is it that you think that perhaps the more traditional companies could be doing differently in order to move like their organization's workflows into a more modern or more software-based or more efficient mode that they're not doing today?
I think for the big organization, I think most of them are aware. It's just that when you're big, it takes longer. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking, for example, about the telcos or the broadcasters. I think it takes more time for them. You know, like they have innovations, cycles of innovations that last for 10 to 20 years. So rolling up some innovation takes some time, unless they have the feeling that they are totally disrupted. Like when we started to see that Netflix, everybody started to do some replay. So even the replay was even better, I think, on the boxes. But for, you know, maybe more practical reasons, we had IPTV, for example, in France. And so a lot of people were used to have a box from their operator directly at home with a hard drive where they could, you know, record, or they could have access to many channels. But for the new actors and when companies want to launch some really new services, I think they should really benchmark. That's you know, I come from Europe. It's really funny because there is a lot of research being done in Europe. My fellow open source projects, MediaInfo, VLC, FFmpeg, all started at the same place, at the same time.
Okay.
So for me, near Paris 20 years ago, coincidence, right? But it means that, you know, there was a ground that made it possible. I don't understand why innovation is driven so much in the US, especially mostly, not only, but mostly on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. And I think these companies, you know, if you go to a broadcaster event, Netflix is not going to give a talk. And the problem is, if you're talking only about your peers, you're innovating at the pace of your peers. If you want to innovate at the fastest, you know, possible pace, you need to look at the people that are, you know, are in advance compared of you. And what I like about these big companies is that most of them have a blog on Medium, and they share actually, you know, what they are doing. They are kind of transparent on this. That's what I said. Netflix at some point, they said, you know, our business is to create content and make sure that people continue to consume it. It's not to write a packager. So they need to have all the infrastructure and they need to do the stuff. Basically, they keep it transparent so that someone don't take it and just replicate what they do. So I don't think they're going to open source all their infrastructure code. But they can communicate on it and they can say, hey, we build this. Actually, we're so resilient because we build what they call the Chaos Monkey. They explain to everybody. I think everybody was like, what are you doing here? They say, hey, randomly in production, we just kill servers and we make sure that, you know, by looking at the analytics, that actually it's okay for the viewers. Mm-hmm. Do you imagine any broadcaster saying, hey, I'm going to kill, you know, this infrastructure, I'm going to look, you know, at what happens? So there's a shift, I think, in the way that this company think. At the moment, they are in advance. There's nothing that other teams can do. There are brilliant people everywhere. It's just innovation is really a mindset. I don't know if it helps people who are watching us to really use GPAC, but for me, at some point, what is really difficult is in this industry, I talked about the talent challenge that we have, like many industries. Hmm. The problem is that if you're new, you see the problem with a new eye and you have new solutions and you see the new things. But the people who really make it work, and the reason why people contact me, for example, is that I've been here for 20 years. You need people with the experience, having seen the different waves of innovation, knowing about all the acronyms, even the acronyms you could write a book. You need us, actually, the dinosaurs of this industry. We need to make a mix because the dinosaurs actually are higher on the decision-making level, and the new people are probably more aware about the flexibility and the new way of doing. And, you know, we need to create a point where, you know, they meet. Yeah.
Somehow they meet. It's it's a matter of being open, and, you know, but I think the transparency that you talk about with, you know, Netflix and the other medium blogs, so to speak, is an important factor there, because if you're willing to be transparent about that, you're more likely to have a culture internally that's willing to listen and exchange ideas, and that's certainly been very positive.
It goes in both directions. I remember a couple of years ago, we got a contract with France Télévisions, and they have a division that's called France Télévisions Access, about accessibility. Mm-hmm. And the team is top-notch about when it comes to accessibility. And they have a blog, and it's super interesting. If you want to learn about what are the best practices and why people do this and how it works, you know, they also educate you on these things. Mm-hmm. Of course, as an open source project, we have, you know, a lot of people coming to see us on this subject. So accessibility is fairly important. It's not an important, you know, market money wise, but that's an important use case social wise.
Yeah.
So it's important as well to investigate this. And recently, companies started to be interested in subtitles a lot and captions. And there is AI also on the top of it. I mean, that's because when you're watching it, imagine you're at work and you're watching, I don't know, a soccer game because that's the World Cup or the Olympics. But you're at home. You cannot put, you're not at home, you're at work. You cannot put the volume up. Mm. So you want to see the captions. And that's the same when you're swiping on the social media. You're looking for something. You see someone talking.
Yeah.
You don't care. But if you see the captions, you catch a word and you say, hey, this is interesting for me. Just, you know, watching what's following, or you know, saving it for later. So they saw that the caption stuff was not only about the population, and also the population aging. Yeah. It's not only a population being disabled, and it's just a fraction, a minority. And if the regulator is not doing it, I'm not doing it. Did you see that, you know, we're all going somehow to have some disability of some sort, even if it's only contextual, because we cannot put the volume up. You know, it happens to everybody. You're commuting, you know, you cannot interact the same way because you're in your car and you cannot look at the screen and look at the road, or you're in the subway and there are many people around you.
Sure.
So the start to see some
contextual disability.
Yeah, and that's where I think, for example, I was giving the example of the broadcasters. I think that's where the broadcasters are really up to the game when it comes to this, because they had the regulators asking for them. They had dedicated teams. They made groups, working groups for 20 years.
Yeah.
And there's nothing that replaces the dinosaurs having experience in doing this, knowing, you know, what is the right color, what is the right position, what is the right way to signal this.
Sure. That's a fair point. All right, I'm going to bring it to a close there. Thank you, Juanma. It's really good to have you with us. You were talking about interactivity and the trouble of VODs. The best way to interact with us is to subscribe to the channel and press like. It's the best we can do, and I hope you all go along with our plan. So until next time, Juanma, thank you for being with us, and wish you well.
Thank you, Russell.